It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Governor Tom Wolf on Monday afternoon signed budget bills totaling $11 billion to fund state operations through the remainder of the fiscal year, June 30th. The legislature had passed those bills over the weekend. The first part of the budget was approved in May, $25.8 billion. Charlie Thompson is a reporter for the Patriot News and Penn Live and has covered state government for many years. Charlie, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Charlie, remind us, why do it in two steps? Were lawmakers just waiting to see the extent of the economic toll from the pandemic?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, what happened between the governor's budget address in February of this year and the actual start of earnest budget negotiations was the coronavirus pandemic and the lockdown of the economy and the obviously the pandemic recession and plummeting tax revenues and everything. So the wisdom of everybody involved back last spring was, well, look, we know we have a certain floor of revenue that we'll continue to receive. Let's build out a budget that funds our schools, funds our public universities, and keeps the rest of state government moving through November, and then we'll reconvene at the end of the year, and we'll see where we are financially and build out the rest of the budget. So that's why this two-step dance this year.
Mm-hmm. The votes were 104-97 in the House, 31-18 in the Senate, mostly along party lines. No tax increases. Any significant changes in funding for major areas such as education?
No. The main lines for basic education, K-12 schools and the state-owned universities and state aid to the state-related like Pitt and Penn State, that was all worked out at a level-funded level for the 2021 fiscal year back in June. And they didn't touch that this time. So the schools are all, you know, kind of moving on what they were told they were going to get. And to be quite honest with you, most of the rest of state government is pretty much level funded. But, you know, like nobody's really getting any major new funding initiative this year. There's no real new basket of funds. It's just kind of a survival budget.
Was the only real point of contention how to use the $1.3 billion in leftover money from the Federal CARES Act?
That was the most public area of dispute, I would say. Honestly, at the end of the day, when they were finalizing this deal this month, even that was not really that much of a dispute. It was more of a public point of contention because, you know, even last week we had restaurant and bar owners rallying on the Capitol steps saying that their industry needed aid and some other pleas from different groups. But well, the Wolf administration at the end was simply hoping to try to get a budget passed that would allow them to keep state government afloat and not force them to furlough people in the middle of a pandemic. You know, they just wanted to kind of hang on to what they had. And Republicans who typically want to look for cuts and streamline things and so forth, you know, they weren't even pushing for big cuts this year because, you know, everybody just kind of realized that, you know, we're in dire straits this year. Nobody wanted to see people lose jobs or even have a big drawn out battle because there was no way that there was going to be a tax increase approved. And everybody kind of just seemed to take all their normal philosophical points of view and push them into the next year when things might be, hopefully, a little more normal.
Democratic Senate leader Jay Costa said he wasn't happy with the budget, but he voted for it along with Senator Vincent Hughes, another Democrat from the Philadelphia area, saying the state needs the funding to continue operations. Both indicated they want to continue to look for ways to provide assistance to those businesses and individuals devastated by the pandemic. Do we have any idea what they might have in mind and where this assistance could come from?
Yes, specifically about 90 miles south of me in Washington, D.C. At the state level, their biggest hope right now is that with a Biden administration coming in, that will reset the possibility for a next round of federal relief. And that relief may include big chunks of money for state and local governments, and it may include another big chunk of direct relief to industries like hotels, airlines, tourism, restaurants and bars. But I think as well as, you know, some additional supplemental unemployment insurance. But, you know, I think in Harrisburg, they're hoping that that's going to come from Washington right now.
Charlie Thompson is a reporter covering the state government for the Patriot News and Penn Live. Charlie, thanks so much for your time.
Sure. Thank you. My pleasure.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. After World War II, the Marshall Plan helped Western Europe rebuild. Today, Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto and other leaders have called for a new Marshall Plan for a massive investment in Middle America. The Marshall Plan for Middle America Roadmap is a report from researchers at the University of Pittsburgh Center for Sustainable Business, a vision for transitioning energy sources from fossil fuels to renewables, in a way that promotes equity among people who work and live amidst these changing industries. Dr. Leslie Marshall is the lead author of the roadmap and associate director of the Center for Sustainable Business at Pitt. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Carmen Gonzalez is a professor of law at Loyola University of Chicago, who has studied environmental law and where human rights and environmental justice converge. She wrote a paper that was cited in the Marshall Plan. Welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So how are environmental justice and racial justice related? Carmen, we're going to start with you.
Let's look at fossil fuels. If you look at who has been most impacted by the extraction, transportation, combustion of fossil fuels, it's low-income communities and communities of color, not just in the United States, but all over the world. If you look at who is facing displacement by climate change and will be displaced in the future, disproportionately, it's people of color. So there is a very strong linkage here between racism and the injustices that we see in terms of the location of polluting industry and communities that have not been able to have a voice in the types of industries that are located where they live and the impact that that has on their health.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, how do you see that connection?
All of these pieces are interrelated. So when we're talking about the negative impacts of climate change, when we're talking about the potential to reduce air pollution by reducing the burning of fossil fuels in the economy, by investing in renewable energy infrastructure, it has the potential to improve outcomes across the board for communities that we know are being disproportionately impacted on a public health front, mm-hmm. that in the context of COVID, there's a growing number of reports and studies that are suggesting and showing that women, people of color, immigrant communities are all feeling the negative effects of COVID from a jobs perspective much more acutely, as an addition to from a public health perspective. So we're talking about marshalling investment that could be put towards building out clean, renewable energy infrastructure that would have a positive impact on reducing the causes of air pollution, creating pathways for workforce development, among other things. But all of that is foreground by the kind of research that Professor Gonzalez is pointing to.
Leslie, I want to ask you, what does a sustainable economic future mean? What does it mean to you in the context of Middle America and this roadmap?
At the University of Pittsburgh, we define sustainability as having three components. It involves the balancing of equity, environment, and economics so that a current and future generations can thrive. So that equity piece is really central, and we often think of that as social equity, but equity underlies, when we talk about the economics piece, when we talk about the environmental piece, as you've just heard from Professor Gonzalez, there are environmental equity, environmental justice considerations involved there. So when we think about a sustainable economic development plan, we're thinking about a way to catalyze investment across our four-state region, to do that through this avenue where there's this huge opportunity as part of the global market shift towards renewable energy, in large part because of the necessity to respond to climate change. We have an opportunity now to build out infrastructure that would let us lead in that future-oriented economy that's around renewables, more diversified energy economy. But we want to do that in a way that is going to seek to redress the persistent inequities that we know exist across our communities. So the U.S. energy economy is one of the least diversified in terms of non-white workers being part of that economy in the U.S. So when we talk about putting money into projects that are going to build out solar arrays, that are going to provide the manufacturing of electric vehicles right here in our regional community, we want to make sure that we're not just talking about that in the way that it's going to continue to benefit predominantly white middle-class workers, predominantly men. So when we look at some of the projects that are actually happening around this sustainable economic development in our region, many of them include requirements for union labor representation or for pipelines in workforce development to have more women, more people of color becoming part of pre-apprenticeship programs so that we're seeing better jobs going not just to the groups that they've always gone to in our communities, but to a wider range of folks who are represented across our communities. When we talk about sustainable economic development, we also need to talk about the infrastructure that's necessary to support that development. So one of our key partners in the Marshall Plan for Middle America roadmap process has been that we've done a lot of work with the Reimagine Appalachia campaign team. And they've spent a lot of time talking, for example, about the importance of broadband as a real equity issue.
When you're talking about fossil fuel extraction and climate change and racial injustice, how these issues are interwoven, how does one create equity? Does it come down to jobs or education?
We know the harms that the fossil fuel industry has wrought, and we know that if we are to have a livable future, we have to transition to clean energy. But it has to be a planned transition in which we make sure that we lift up the people who have borne the burdens of the past rather than simply perpetuating the injustices of the past. So in my own work, I write about clean energy projects elsewhere in the world that have actually reinforced the injustices of the fossil fuel economy that have taken place at the backs of and at the expense of low-income people, communities of color. For example, I cite wind farms in Oaxaca, Mexico, that have been placed on indigenous lands, but the indigenous peoples are not getting the benefit of energy. The benefits are going to large corporations.
Really, we're talking about working with the communities, with the people who are affected. It's exactly what Professor Gonzalez was talking about. People are experts on their own lived experiences, on their own lives, and we need to do a better job at the folks who are in these decision-making arenas, who are drafting policy, drafting legislation, of actually doing that with the input, with the co-creation of the communities that are most affected.
Carmen, how should legal protections, basic human rights, play into these plans that think about the future of regions that are heavily involved with fossil fuels?
It is about being proactive. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has told us that we don't have a lot of time. We have to become carbon neutral by 2050. We have to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by half by 2030. That is not a lot of time. The good news is that renewable energy is becoming increasingly a good deal economically. But the difficulty is that it is so deeply entrenched in the economy of so many parts of our country and so many parts of the world. The only way to move away from fossil fuels is to focus our attention on those who are going to be most affected by the transition and make sure that it is a win for them, that we are actually moving forward and addressing not just climate in the abstract, but economic issues, social justice issues together, that this is part of a larger plan that is going to make people's lives better. There is a reason why fossil fuel dependency is called the natural resource curse. It takes up all the air in the room, it squashes other industries, and it makes people dependent on the boom and bust cycles of that particular industry, and deprives people of the resilience to be able to move forward in a climate that is changing very rapidly and perhaps irreversibly unless we take action now.
So I really appreciate the attention to the proactive nature of the Marshall Plan. So I want to elaborate a little bit on that as well, because I think this is a key part of what we're trying to do here. So in the sense of the European Marshall Plan, we're borrowing on this idea of massive investment, public and private, in this transition. But the other part of the Marshall Plan, as we've envisioned it, is about building coalitions across stakeholder groups. So we're not just working with the people who live in these communities. We're talking about working with the companies that operate in those communities. We're talking about working with local government, investors, labor unions, et cetera, because we see this transition in order to have this phase, this phasing out of fossil fuels in a way that's socially, environmentally, and economically responsible. It needs to be done in partnership across sectors.
So finally, the roadmap acknowledges the most immediate challenge is raising the estimated $600 million needed to implement the Marshall Plan roadmap for Middle America over the next 10 years. We've seen other plans like the Green New Deal, which frankly been rejected by Republicans, somewhat polarizing. Why could this plan succeed? And we'll start with Carmen.
I think this plan could succeed because it's bottom up rather than top down. It's bipartisan and not linked to one political party or another. It crosses a variety of stakeholders. It relies not just on government, but on the private sector as well. Industries that, in fact, if they do not change what they do, will cease to exist, and they know it.
Leslie?
The report itself, we started it before we ever knew what that federal, if there'd be a federal transition, what that might look like, because we knew that it had to be done, right? So we knew if we were not going to get federal support, that we needed a locally driven solution to be able to make this happen. Now, we always knew that it would be tremendously helpful to have some of that mix of public and private equity come from the federal government. But yes, it is intentionally nonpartisan. It is intentionally about getting everyone around the table together and talk about something that's good for everyone in the long run.
Dr. Leslie Marshall is the lead author of the Marshall Plan for Middle America Roadmap and Associate Director of the Center for Sustainable Business at Pitt. And Carmen Gonzalez is a professor of law at Loyola University of Chicago. Thanks to both of you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, Joya Zenkovic, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.